to the September Two Peas in a Podcast with Michelle.
And Trevor.
And it's spring. Can you believe it's spring?
It's a big
so
one.
So quickly. It's already very wet now. Well, nearly spring, I should say.
Yeah, it's been wet and cold August, though, hasn't it? So I suspect that we're going to have a late spring.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Well, I've had a terrible time in the Northern Hemisphere, but we're having quite a good time. I keep rainfall stats, and I think for the last 7 days it's rained. So we've only got, 10 mils, 5 mils, 2 mils, 1 mil sort of thing, but for that long it means everything's so wet that if you go out there or anything less than waterproof, you get wet feet, wet trousers, wet socks, everything, you know?
Yes, I don't think my gumboots have had quite the workout that they've had this year. And also I did my little fire pit. You'll be very well, you've seen my fire pit, Trevor. Repurposed from the inside of a dryer, which is not my dryer because own a dryer. But a friend had a dryer and I repurposed that fire pit. But I haven't even really had a chance to use it this winter because it's been so wet that there haven't sort of been those days or evenings to sit outside. Repurposed it as a pond. I have it as a summer thing, so keep the mozzies away.
A pot plant.
All right, what are we talking about today, Trevor?
Well, because it's spring, there's almost a... Well, we can talk about anything, really, but you should be, as a gardener, you should be preparing the soil in readiness to plant just about everything. And we have said before that everything is really in two categories, that is in Mediterranean and in the Three Sisters. So this is a big one. You're probably working hard weeding.
Yeah.
Probably working hard preparing the soil. And I've got a bit to say about soil preparation because, well, the climate is obviously changing, you know, and there's bushfires in Spain and Greece, there's droughts in England, and 40-degree temperatures for 7 days or something in China, and the dams are all running half dry up there, and yet we've got floods and decent rainfall, so you can only guess at what's going to happen next, but there are people saying that the most important job in the world is going to be producing food.
Yeah.
Because not only is the population growing, by producing food and using biological and organic methods, you're actually sequestering the carbon. And as I was saying a bit earlier, there's only a certain amount of carbon in the world. There's always has been that same amount, but we seem to be successfully taking it out of the ground and putting it in the atmosphere. So we've got to put it back in the ground. It's the only option, you know.
Absolutely.
So anyway.
And then I just think those changes in climates have been really interesting as well. I mean, I think probably the coldest winter I can remember for a long time here, like you said. So it is rather interesting how people are, like we keep saying in all the podcasts, people are going to have to start adapting. Listen, watch the seasons. Something you sort of focused on particularly last time. So, yeah.
Well, I probably focus on it every time because I do feel as though it's urgent. And at any rate, we'll go quiet on that. And we'll look at our regular feature of native plant of the month. But this time I've gone from Sturt Desert Pea.
I know. I love yours. Yours has been amazing. I was up in Roxby Downs in the holidays. So when was that? July. And it just went for a walk through the township of Roxby, which is actually quite a nice little town. A beautiful drive up there, of course, through the gorgeous Flinders Ranges. Everybody's front yard had, like, carpets of Sturt Desert Pea. So we see it as such this exotic thing here, but it was just everybody had it, which is one of the most beautiful, beautiful native plants. And yours have been going great guns, haven't they?
Well, they've been surprisingly good because they seem to do all right in clay. And a friend of mine, everyone is a crowd stopper. Everyone looks at them and then suddenly they've got a story about them, you know. And they don't expect to see them here, but they have been dropping down long runners. So what they do after they flower and in a bush form, they then send runners out. That is a long stem low to the ground and touching the ground, in fact, and I think they root from there again. So I think the reason that you see them as a ground cover up north, which he's saying that you do, there's flowers everywhere over a large area, is that the actual stems of the flowers drop to the ground, run along, and like cooch and that sort of thing, they then take root along that length. So they are one worth having. It's hot enough here, I think. We're almost a desert, but it's a bit different this year.
Every other year, it's great.
And it's one of the few natives. It seems that, well, the native gums do all right in the soil, but most of the plants that you get from Western Australia are sand-based plants, but this one is from Alice Springs and it's a clay-based plant. You just got to be a bit careful about the seed. You got to put it in hot water overnight before you plant it.
Quite a lot of seeds need that, don't they? I'm just trying to think, like even putting them in water overnight seems to help, like the sweet peas, that was the mistake I was making before. Like a lot of seeds I'm doing that for, so that's good to remember that.
And then the other flower of the month, I'm sorry to hog these, but we've both had a busy month. There's a beautiful daisy that I love. It's a common daisy. It's called the, well, maybe not, but maybe it's called the Marguerite Daisy, because these names tend to attach themselves closely to different places. Now, I love it. It's a self-sowing one, so you get about six of them around the original plant.
Yeah.
It has great big flowers. And it, you know how you always think of a wildflower garden? It's quite a trendy thing to have a meadow of flowers.
Yeah.
Well, this would form very well as part of that. Well, to be honest, it's a good landing strip and mounds for bees and butterflies. So all the daisies, and there's a lot of them, they're really great for bees and butterflies because they can all have a rest there.
Daisies like, to me, daisies are the ultimate happiness flower. They're just like simple and happy and bright. I love them. The common daisy would have to be one of my favourite flowers.
I think the sunflower is one of the daisy family or somehow related to it too, because certainly, you know, that sort of centre bit with all the seeds in it and then the petals in bright colours. But I haven't given up on wallflowers. They're looking beautiful at my place at present. So we'll go on doing this, itemising particular flowers, point them out and feature them each week, because we're not actually good flower gardeners, are we?
We do like our more useful, or what we perceived as the more useful. But maybe it's us. Actually, maybe we just like eating, Trevor. Maybe the reason we like...
No, there is a certain urgency. Everyone's saying that the homegrown's got the taste, and that's why we do it.
Oh, yeah, I'm so excited, yeah. Yeah, I'm so excited with some of my stuff that's coming through. And even like my daughter-in-law wants me to plant a custard apple because she had an organic custard apple. And she said, I've had them before and I didn't like them. And she had this organic homegrown custard apple and she was like, oh, well, that's just a whole new story. Like, so I get this text message, Mom, we got to plant custard apple, you know. Mm. So, yeah, you're right. It's also, yeah, a completely different taste and it's just lovely. But there's something very zen about going out to the garden and picking flowers as well. And
speaking of zen.
Yeah, speaking of zen. Did you love my segue, Trevor?
Well, I thought I'd go into courtyards. We're not a professional designers here and you need to be pretty good to design courtyards to their maximum.
Yes.
And they can be all sorts, you know, sort of Moroccan one, bright colours and all sorts of things like that. You know the Moroccan courtyards pretty well.
Yeah, well, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, and I've been to Spain and they too, over a long time, have everything counts. The walls count, the sun orientation counts, the drainage counts, the paving counts and the plantings count. So in a courtyard, it is really just a study of minute detail that you're going to stare at for the rest of your life. And that's why the Japanese are so world-renowned in that they will polish a stone for three times in order to get it the colour that they want. So with courtyards, I think the Japanese is probably a mistake because I'm mighty suspicious of anything with water in Gawler. I think you need the water for your irrigation and for your drinking and for your pets and that sort of thing. You can put some out for your birds, but when you start putting fountains and ponds and stuff like that in, well, you're very Japanesey, so I can't correct you on that way. But on the other hand, you must think what your overall water consumption is, and if you're already consuming your maximum amount, well, I wouldn't go for ponds and that, but certainly that's part of Japanese. But the paving is interesting. Paving becomes pretty important, especially this time of year when it's slippery on clay.
Yeah.
So you can think about paving. They often use stepping stones, that is flat stones in gravel. That looks pretty good, actually.
It's gorgeous. But it's very organised, isn't it?
Yes.
To have like that kind of stepping stones in gravel, you've got to be prepared to make sure that the gravel doesn't take it over. Sometimes that can happen as well.
Well, you said zen, and there's no rushing this. There's no good saying, I want a courtyard now. It's not going to happen. You just take whatever time it takes in order to get what you want. So, yeah, the gravel needs treatment underneath, and the stones need to be placed beautifully and, you know, both aesthetically and level-wise and all the rest of it. So there's always a lot of work in courtyards, but that's just because you've decided not to rush. You decided to sit down and meditate, you see. So you've got things like statues, but once again, statues, you need to choose the one you personally like. Bamboo. Well, bamboo is quite expensive. It is a beautiful plant and it lasts forever and it makes a spectacular high. Sorry? It
means you can have a panda bear as a pet. Crop enough of it. That's right. As a nice addition to the garden.
Yeah, big rugs, that big rocks that you saw on one of your walks. Have to transport it to your place and put it. And prune trees. Trees that are pruned to form the shape of clouds is quite the norm. So I just mentioned that because we haven't mentioned it before, and courtyards bear thinking about, you know, they can just be a mess.
Well, and I think the thing is too, it's about remembering that it doesn't matter what size your space is, you can actually still have that really beautiful, like nature, include nature in it. The Hemenji Gardens in Adelaide are just divine. They're exquisite. And I have seen some gorgeous courtyards in really small spaces where people have still been able to enjoy. I know the Japanese gardens are very zen and my way of gardening is a little bit more perhaps zany. And I'm not even going to pretend that I would then do that gardening. But a friend of ours, actually, he was on the podcast, Dave, who did the pots, he's gotten right into bonsais. And that is just like amazing garden, like yep. An amazing way of gardening. So yeah, I think courtyards have that beautiful haven. Don't waste the space, I think it's really important. I think that's what Japanese gardens really highlight, that don't think, oh, well, I've just got to put some pot plants down the chairs. You can do more than that.
You can, and also it does include pots, and Dave and Trish were quite into pots, and we really haven't said a lot about pots either. There's obviously a big culture in pots, you know.
Yeah.
And I personally don't go for it because of the heat on the side of the terracotta. It makes it very difficult to keep the water up in summer. But it's still worth it. There are people who do it in the shade, who do it in the semi-shade, who figure out ways around it by putting irrigation in each pot and stuff like that. So we probably should focus a bit outside our comfort zone more often.
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. Yeah, even if you have a small space.
I'm going to jump here down to birds.
Birds?
Well, it's just that there's a swallow outside where we're broadcasting from.
Yeah.
That every year makes a mud nest, and we've left it there now for about 5-7 years, something like that. And they're back again. So spring is nesting time, you see. Yeah. So we know the sparrows, we know the, you know, the blackbirds and the noisy miners. A lot of things will perch in this area. Will actually take up home in this area because, well, A, we don't use sprays, so everything is edible, including the grubs. And I've got a remarkable, I should have showed you, but my broccolini and my cabbage are almost holeless. I mean, they do have some holes in the leaves that are on the ground, but sparrows will go underneath the leaves and look up, and they take the grubs out. At sunset, we've got what we've named, personally ourselves, we call it the feeding frenzy. So just on sunset, when all these sort of gnats, these spiraling insects come up, on top of, you know, lots of flies and mosquitoes, there's about 30 or so birds, including Willy Wagtail, the best of them, but also, you know, some ones who don't often come to the company, like the white-cheeked honeyeater, and others too that you don't see very often, like the shrike thrush in company with other birds. They all come along and they all take it in turns. The smallest and the loneliest ones go first, and then the big families, the mobs of noisy miners and the New Holland honey is coming after. But it's an hour or so of feeding frenzy, which I think, see, we've got no flies or insects here, and yet we must have them.
Yeah.
I reckon the birds are really good. So I would encourage everyone to put in bird nests and to be very talkative and very friendly towards every bird that there is, including crows and things like that, you know, because I think the whole lot of them are fantastic at biodiversity, keeping the life of your garden in balance, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And also, you know, they're just the most beautiful, like, sit and stop and watch them, because if you sit really quietly, you can, like you said, the feeding frenzy, you can sit and watch them for a while, and if they feel safe, they'll come back as well, which I think is ideal. Yeah, you want lots of birds in your garden.
So that is just a... Also, it's time to plant... Well, I don't really want to read out a list, but there are things you're too late for. I mean, basically the perennials, the asparagus, the strawberries, the globe artichokes, and the other perennials that there are, you're too late. You can still plant spuds. In fact, you can plant spuds right through until October, November. And that's because although you might have frost, we don't here, but you might have frost where you are, they're in the ground for about 2 months. So if you plant them down 400 mils like I've advised before, they take a long while to come to the surface. And so you can, even if there's a late frost, you can put cardboard over them for the night. It's also too late for winter crops. Brassicas, peas and broad beans should be in and growing now. But don't be sad because the big ones, are here. The Mediterranean crops, yes, and the Three Sisters are here. That's a massive amount. Under that, there are all the pumpkins. You know, there are the zucchinis, the marrows, the pumpkins, and it's things like the cucurbits, the cucumbers, and there's a massive number of crops that you can plant now. And it's a little bit early, perhaps, so prepare the soil first, but it's a good time to plant carrots because they planted so shallow, they're only about, well, if you're lucky, 5 mils below the surface. They're a tiny seed, and so they need to be kept constantly damp. So now's a good time for carrots. And you can always plant the old faithful onions there, spinach, celery, etc. So I don't know whether you want to spend any time on that.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'm still harvesting carrots. So we're putting in some new ones, which, yep, they're just absolutely gorgeous. We thought they'd be too big, but they're not. Yep. They're delicious. My spuds are doing spectacularly well because this time what I've done, very clever Trevor and also poor on time, so you have to get a bit creative, is I planted all the spuds in like a patch just outside the chook shed. So when I clean the chook shed out, I throw the straw on top of the spuds. Very, like, I just kind of do that straight away.
Yep.
Well, that has been amazing. Like, I've got this pile, so I'll start bandicooting the spuds soon, and then the straw, which has got all the chook manure through it, which is too heavy to put on any other patches, but it's fine to put on the spuds because they're not really up yet. It's given that time to water down and break down, so you can then when I do that, I'll start spreading that out across the rest of the veggie garden, which is next to it, because otherwise normally if you throw it on the veggies it's a bit too acidic, but it shouldn't be by the time it's broken down a bit. So the spuds are doing spectacularly well, which I'm really pleased about. And I'm definitely looking forward to chucking in the Three Sisters planting. I've got a special spot this time this year.
Yeah, but all of them are great. I mean, corn, beans, what do you say?
And carrots. Once you get the hang of it, because I was always a bit, didn't have lots of success with carrots, but as I always laughingly say, my COVID carrots, it was one great thing about COVID. I was home enough to run out and water them 15 times a day. But I think, like you said, it has been a wet enough winter.
Yep.
Get out there and plant them, because honestly, there is nothing like a homegrown carrot.
No, you can juice them.
Oh, yum.
You can juice them with beetroot and wine.
Yeah,
it's just better than alcohol.
Oh,
hard to believe.
Don't be ridiculous, Trevor, but it's nearly. No, it is. It's actually, it's fantastic. It's beautiful.
Right now, you need to prepare your soil, and this is becoming more and more of a political topic, because there are people everywhere throughout the world realising that even if we go to solar and wind power, it's still going to be 200 years before we get back to where we were in 1974, because the amount of carbon in the atmosphere has virtually doubled since then. And the trouble with all of our new ideas like wind power and solar power is that there's a lot of materials that go into them, there's a lot of power that goes into them, that includes hydrogen power. Well, you need to use energy for them a lot. And so you're not actually dropping down the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. And what's worse, everyone's going urban. So throughout the whole world, everyone's leaving the countryside and going into the cities. And it's actually, the only cure for this situation is to regenerate the deserts of the world. And the deserts of the world are a good percentage of the Earth's surface, because with chemical agriculture, we're killing the biolife in the soil. And that biolife in the soil is the fertility, because you get fungi. The mycorrhizal fungi is a creature that burrows into the roots of the plants, and those roots expand tenfold. And when those roots are working fully, they mine the minerals, they inoculate both the plant and the soil, and they hold the moisture. So you cannot afford to lose the life in the soil because everything is dependent upon them, including the capture of carbon. And these plants once stored all the carbon that's in the atmosphere. It's us who have gone in and turned the joint into a desert, you know. Yeah. Although it seems impossible to turn it back, it's not. Because the process that we used to turn it into a desert, which was to strip it bare, and then that bareness meant that there was no carbon in the soil because the roots were no longer growing down, and that meant that the wind and the rain eroded it into the river valleys and out to sea and across that. But when you want to turn that backwards, it's actually fairly easy. Because all you got to do, it's a self-generating process in that if you take that sand and you put in water and fertilizer, you can use, you know, sewage sludge from human waste, or you can use compost that we've got lots of, and you can use biochar, and you can use humus, which is basically all rotting matter. There's a lot of it we've got. If you put that in the soil with water, you can keep pushing the desert edges back. Once you do that, of course, the roots start going down. All the microorganisms return, the mitochondrial starts doing its work and inoculate everything, the plants become healthier and you become healthier because they're all much richer in what they're gaining, and so are we.
Yes.
So you it becomes fairly important now that you've got to prepare the soil to definitely stay away from the worst of the chemical ones, you know.
Oh, and I was listening to the news this morning, they were talking about, and actually I thought, oh, it's relevant we were meeting today, because they talked about how the price of vegetables are going down. And they said, oh, one of the reasons was because...
Going up or down?
The price of vegetables is coming down because they've had a good recovery from the floods. And then they said, oh, and the issues was the reason that the vegetables were so high was the price of fertilizers. And I thought to myself, they're not talking about organic fertilizers.
No.
They're talking about chemical stuff. So, you know, when you're buying non-organic vegetables, you need to think about how many chemicals are going into that ground, because realistically, you know, like Trevor's saying, feed this earth and you'll get, like, everyone's so precious about organic vegetables being expensive, but it's like, actually, you're paying for vegetables when you buy the vegetables. When you're growing the vegetables, that's what you're getting, is the vegetables. You know, you need to stop and think about, well, how many chemicals are going into the soil?
Yeah,
and what's the long-term thing of it, you know?
What
and
harm is that doing you?
Yeah.
Because this mycorrhizal fungus and that contains the carbon in the ground and absorbs water is also capable of knocking out toxins.
Yeah.
And so it's doing many, many things that really we have not got a handle on yet. It is actually cleaning up the system, like in a carbon filter, so the water going out is better, and it's storing and mining minerals for the roots. The roots themselves can't do it. So this is actually, those minerals are what gives it the taste. It's in the sea as well. The plankton in the sea, especially in the northern Pacific, put out 50% of the Earth's oxygen, and if we keep going the way we're going, that the water becomes so acidic, or carbonic acid, that the shellfish, the coral, the algae and the krill, which is basically the whole of the life in the sea, is also going to die. So you can see that the urgency is fairly high. So we have to say, stay organic when you prepare your soil. There's plenty of things you can use. You can use your own compost. You can use your lawn clippings if you add a bit of pelletized organic manure like Rapid Razor and what's the other one? Anyway, you can use organic material. It does a better job than the non-organic. Just stay away from superphosphate and those other ones whose name I rightfully forget. So just ban them from your
garden. Because like, feed the soil, that'll bring...
Yeah, well, like you say, use the waste from the chooks. They're creating your fertility for you. And you'll find that everything works much better. And in fact, it's happening worldwide, in that the biodynamic and organic farmers are, well, they're starting up their own little food joints. There's restaurants that are advertising. They're the ones you should be putting your money into. And also, I think John Houston, or one of the ex-politicians, is trying to get the superannuation funds to go into buying responsible farming, you know.
There are some really good superannuation, ethically funded superannuation funds. Mm. I will be investing in those. At the moment, my organisation that I work for won't do it. But...
Well, I think we all have to... we have to make sure none of our green waste goes into landfill. I mean, whether you put it in your own compost bins or put it in the green bin for the council to do their thing with, they are doing it. It's very good. Surprisingly, that process of them taking your green waste and turning it into compost also produces a gas, a methane gas, which there's enough of it, if we all did it, there's enough of it to replace diesel. So, you know, that's another sort of, you know, how they always talk about solar and wind being unreliable because they're periodic depending on which way the wind blowing and the sunshine. So you need the base load. Well, you can actually get your base load from a gas that comes from the composting system.
Yes.
And the other thing to note is that we often say that cows are no good because they burp carbon dioxide out of their mouth.
They're farted as well, Trevor.
Yeah, I know, but...
Trevor's far too polite to say farting cows. I'm not farting cows.
Well, actually, they built it, but anyway, the fact is there's already been millions upon millions of wildebeest and reindeer and all that on Earth.
Yeah.
They're not the cause of it because the cow's the same structure as those guys. They're not the cause of it, and if you properly manage them, they can actually enhance grasslands like in the Serengeti. They come along, they trample it down, they poo on it, and they move on because they're being chased by all the predators, by the lions and dingoes and whatnot. So they're actually capable of getting grasses to grow well. If you mow your lawn, you're actually doing it a disservice because it never grows deep roots. If you let it grow higher, it grows deeper roots. And those
That's why
roots,
I always leave mine, Trevor.
Those deeper roots are three times bigger than what you see on top. So that's just a few lessons about how you should treat your soil now that you're going to fertilise, you're going to weed, you're going to fertilise, you're going to put in your irrigation, and you're going to put in your seedlings because you've got all your seedlings growing in your hothouse now, ready for the time when you can plant it all. And I guess we'll be on to our next podcast when you plant it all.
We will. Next podcast, I'll be telling you all about how my three sisters are coming up and how I've been eating lovely potatoes and the tomatoes. Oh, that's right. Now, we've got the tomatoes, so our fundraising for the Gawler Broadcasting Association. I say Trevor and I. It's not Trevor and I. Trevor does all the hard yards.
No.
But we've got the tomatoes, and it's been interesting, hasn't it? So Trevor's just been showing me. We seeded 100 of the tomatoes, and so there was 20 boxes. So there'll be 5 heritage tomatoes, 1 different type of heritage tomato per box. But we've already sold 15 boxes, so if anybody would like a box, if you just pop onto the Facebook page and put your name on there, that would be fantastic. But they are going really, really well. The aromas are going brilliantly. The brandy wines are taking their sweet time, but we're hoping they'll catch up.
The brandy wines are all right, but, yeah, I mean, they are slow, and so that means that, you, the listener, knows that your soil has been cold and wet, so there's no point. You've got the same problem we've got in that you've got to wait.
And it's really interesting because I think it was like this time last year where we were talking about having the seedlings ready by September, and they were already like, you know, 8 foot high and moving out of home by then. So it just goes to show you're never too sure what the seasons are going to bring, which is really, really good. So what are we going to talk about next month, Trevor? We'll be right in the spring, heading for October.
Yeah, I think we can leave it loose and fancy free. We'll we'll keep up our...
Not zen, we'll keep it zany, not zen.
Yeah, well, you provide the jokes, I know, but I think we will just talk about progress. My sweet peas are flowering, my strawberries are flowering. So there's a lot happening in spring. In September, everyone's a gardener in September, and every chook lays eggs in September.
Yes. Actually, that's true. I went out to check my chooks the other day. I've been checking the nest probably once every 2 to 3 days, if that, because I've been getting nothing. And I checked the nest, and I had like 8 eggs, and I was like, oh, wow. So we've all decided to start laying.
I've only
got 2 chooks, but they've decided that, oh, actually, we will lay some nice eggs. So I had a beautiful omelette, which I was rather chuffed
about.
Yeah,
they are the best eggs too.
They are definitely bright orange. All right, so gird your loins, people. Get into the garden, and we'll have a bit of a talk next week. So
see you in September.
Yeah. See you.